Welcome into the Brad Sesmat Show. A busy Friday here in the sports world. I'm Jordan Hamm filling in for the big guy, and we have a great show for you. All things Phoenix Suns here coming up. Big game three against the Denver Nuggets. We're going to start things off with Gina Mizell. Does a great job covering the team for The Athletic the past couple of years, now writing in-house for the Suns, but has had some great features talking about the team's relentlessness in a recent article. I think that sums it up really nicely. So going to talk to her about what the Suns can do to continue this momentum here against the Nuggets as they head to Denver. Speaking of the Denver Nuggets, Katie Wingy does a great job as an analyst, as a reporter over at Altitude up in Denver. We're going to talk to her about what the Suns have been able to do to exploit what's been going on with the Denver Nuggets, the matchups. Can they, if the Nuggets can get back into this, what do they have to do? We're going to get into the nuts and bolts of that. And then also Joel Myers, host of Above the Rim on Sirius XM Radio, covers the NBA, does a great job as well. But let's get right into it. Our rundown brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, we appreciate their support. So let's start things off here with the Phoenix Suns. Obviously, if you're going into game three at the start of the series, if I said, hey, when the Suns head to Denver, they're going to be up 2-0. I don't think that too many people would have, you know, been too surprised by that. I think that the Suns are the favorite in this and the way these series go. They're so back and forth. But it's more so the way that the Phoenix Suns have been able to take care of business against the Denver Nuggets, just dismantling them. And they really haven't been games in the fourth quarter. Guys getting rest. And, you know, Michael Malone saying that really one team showed up and it wasn't my Denver Nuggets. It was the other team. When you get a coach to say that, usually you've done your job. Yes, Devin Booker's playing well. Chris Paul is playing very well. DeAndre Ayton is playing very well, but it's Mikal Bridges. It's Jay Crowder. Torrey Craig is getting in on the action now. It truly is relentless. It truly is. You know, they have eight or nine deep going right now. And that's why we've seen the difference in the score between these two. You get past an emotional hurdle like the Los Angeles Lakers, like a player like LeBron and Anthony Davis, even if they weren't at their healthiest. I think that's really kind of freed the Suns up to then go ahead and really take care of business. And I think that the Suns are a pretty good matchup against the Nuggets. Nuggets are long, but Suns have been able to show they can get out and run. They can, you know, create some mismatches. Obviously, if Jamal Murray is in the picture, this is a completely different series also. That's obviously playing a factor as well. But now it is time, you know, if the Nuggets are going to get back into the series, it has to be tonight to do that. So Suns know that. They are now heading to Denver, where it will be a nearly full arena. We've seen the impact that the Suns fans had. I'm sure the Nuggets are going to bring the same amount of energy. Now is the time. You are ahead of the game. You have them pinned down. Now, you know, finish it off, okay? So that's going to be something interesting to look out here for the Phoenix Suns. Finally, Arizona Diamondbacks continuing to struggle. They fired their hitting coach, Darnell Coles, Eric Hinsky as well, was in on the availability. Torrey Lovello just looks tired. And I can't blame him for that. The struggles that this team has gone through, they've had a ton of injuries. A lot of key players have been out. With them too, it's who's the star on that team? It's Ketel Marte, Madison Bumgarner, Zach Gallen. We can throw in that conversation too. It's not the Dodgers where they are just 12 deep. It's not the Padres where they're 12 deep. So they already had one hand tied behind their back when they were going into this fight. They didn't have the roster, and it's they went all in at the wrong time, and it was at the wrong time that nobody knew about. So no one knew a worldwide pandemic was going to be happening and revenues were going to be cut. And they went in on Starling Marte and, you know, adding those final pieces, and it just has not worked out. So those three stars have also found time, you know, in the case of Marte and Gallen, that's been some major time. Madison Bumgarner is pitching better. Is he pitching at the level of World Series MVP and ace? No, but he's pitching better. So that's something that you can draw some optimism from. But you're going off of all of these. They said they waited this long because there have been so many injuries, and this isn't, and an issue solo to the Diamondbacks. This is a league-wide issue right now. A lot of injuries happening after that 60-game season and then the ramp up for the full season and kind of plan that marathon. And it's still June, which is crazy. So the hitting side of things is out. Pitchers have been struggling. But again, they've had to go 8 or 9 deep into their rotation. So it's just so hard to do that. It's just going to be really, really difficult to navigate out of this. So it's now we look at, all right, so they didn't do anything to address the pitching. I think a big part of that is Matt Hergis. You working with these young arms, also working with Madison Bumgarner, I think that you can credit partially, to him showing that perspective to Madison. Madison deserves a lot of credit of what he's been able to do to turn it around. But I think that relationship that Hergis has had back dating back to the Giants is helpful. And that's important to keep around for your star pitcher. If Gallen gets back anytime soon, then you have a pretty good 1-2 to work with. So it's going to be tough sledding here for the Arizona Diamondbacks moving forward. We'll see what that means for Torey Lovello. Mike Hazen made it a point to say he thinks Torey is the man for the job to turn this team around. Torey has said multiple times he signed a contract. He's going to honor his contract. He's in the final year of his contract. So does that, it's not good timing for him that the worst stretch of baseball that they've played in his entire tenure is coming at the very end of a contract and in the first half of his final year where decisions can maybe start being made. Bob Nightingale has put out a report a couple weeks ago that Bruce Bochy is itching to get back. So is that tempting to the Diamondbacks? Is that, you know what you have in Torey Lovello. Do you go get a Bruce Bochy type? What the next couple weeks are going to be really crucial before the trade deadline. And I think for Torey Lovello's future here with the Arizona Diamondbacks. And then speaking of the Diamondbacks and ASU baseball, it is presumed here 10:30 is when the ASU Sun Devils will be announcing their new baseball coach, let go of Tracy Smith after 7 seasons earlier last week. Didn't waste any time. And it sounds like the man for the job is Willie Bloomquist. Former ASU Sun Devil is now with the Diamondbacks organization. The only MLB player to log at least, I believe it's 40 starts at every position in baseball, except for pitcher and catcher. So Mr. Versatility, he is one of the best Sun Devils to ever come through the program. He can certainly reconnect the alumni that seem to have splintered a little bit under Tracy Smith's watch. No coaching experience. That's the interesting thing. ASU has 2 well-regarded assistant coaches who recruit very well. Spencer Torkelson has said he would not be the man he is, the player he is, the number one pick he is without the assistant coaches that they have. So that will be important to retain them or have guys with coaching experience. I think that's the really big thing here. But now let's focus our attention to the Phoenix Suns here. And up next, we have Gina Mizell on the Brad Sussman Show. Well, the Phoenix Suns have been dominant here in the first 2 games in round 2 against the Denver Nuggets. Now looking ahead to round 3 on the road in Denver, we want to bring in Gina Mizell. Does a great job covering the team for the past couple of years and has some great insights on what's going on with this very special team. Gina, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. So you've been around the team for so many years now, and you know, you've seen some really good basketball, you've seen some really bad basketball, but the past couple of nights at Phoenix Suns Arena, has anything even sniffed close to what that experience has been like in that arena with that fan base?
Yeah, I mean, I would go back to just this whole playoff run so far, going back to game 1 against the Lakers. But yeah, it's been electric. And I know that people who have also been inside the arena, you know, obviously can speak to that. But it also sounds like it's coming through on TV. It's garnered some national attention. And I think it's fair to wonder if this is the best home court advantage in the NBA playoffs right now. I know some arenas are also going to full capacity. It will be full capacity here in Denver for game three. And so I'm, you know, excited and eager to see what that environment feels like, but certainly it's been a total blast. And I think it's just a combination of things that's coming out of COVID and sort of the pent up energy that we've felt of being, you know, quarantined and cooped up and not being able to be around each other for a year and a half. And of course, just, you know, snapping the playoff drought and coming out of, you know, being able to experience playoff basketball here for the first time. And that's all just created a really, really exciting atmosphere.
Mm-hmm. You just posted a story about the word relentlessness and that team being relentless. And I think it's a perfect example. You know, that sums it up perfectly, because it's not just Devin Booker. It's not just Chris Paul. It's not just DeAndre Ayton. You're seeing guys, you know, 1 through 8 making key plays. How have you just seen them really embrace that attitude this entire year, but now especially going into the playoff push and now here in the second round?
Yeah, I mean, it's that word relentless has been something that Monty Williams has used since the beginning of the season, like very deliberately, that is what they wanted the DNA of this team to be. And I think it kind of goes back to last year too, when Monty first arrived, that they were sort of this upstart program and they prided themselves on playing hard, on, you know, playing tough on defense and sort of being a team that wouldn't let up, and that made them a pesky opponent. And now you add some more talent and some more experience and you see the blossoming of these players and you still apply that style. And the result is what you've seen on the court right now. But like you said, it's not just the stars of the team or the guys that are on the floor, you know, in the heavy minutes. It's a guy like Torrey Craig, who you've seen with some highlight worthy plays. It's Cam Payne, who again is one of the craziest stories in the NBA, that he's completely revived his career with the Suns team. You know, it's Cam Johnson. It's even guys that are on the bench, you know, with their encouragement and could be called on, you know, at any moment if there was an injury or something along those lines. But yeah, that quality is certainly shown through. It's helped them win a lot of close games. It's helped them beat a lot of good teams during the regular season. And it was needed to beat the Lakers. It's going to be needed to beat the Nuggets, a team that's also been very resilient all season with dealing with Jamal Murray's injury and some other injuries to their team. But to reach the finals or to have a deep playoff run, you kind of have to have that intangible quality. And I think we're seeing that the Suns team has shown that they have that, at least early on in these playoffs.
With DeAndre Ayton, you know, it seems like he's at least going into this year with the fan base a little bit split, you know, for some, whatever, he could put up 50 points and, you know, do a magic trick at halftime and it wouldn't be enough. Right. But for others, it has been, they can see the potential, you know, but that pressure comes with the number one overall pick. Seeing what he's been able to do against the likes of Anthony Davis when he was healthy in the Lakers series, now against the MVP and Jokic, how have you seen him just develop and really come into his own in this postseason?
Yeah, well, don't take my word for it. Take Chris Paul's word for it, who said that he's been the MVP for this team in the playoffs so far because of his consistency, because of his defense, because of his rim protection, because of what he's been asked to do on both ends of the floor. And I mean, it started against the Lakers, like you said, which is his efficient scoring. You're seeing more aggressiveness out of him with that finishing. He had that one-handed dunk in game one against the Nuggets where he practically ripped the rim down and like fell because there was so much authority on that dunk. And so you are starting to see some consistency, I think, from him, or some living up to the moment, where we've seen flashes of this throughout his NBA career. And he's had these moments where you could see the potential and you could see just how big of a deal this, you know, why he was the number one pick, I guess you could say. And then there, like you said, there are the detractors or the reasons why he's, you know, super polarizing, where, you know, they say, oh, he's not Luka Doncic, he's not Trae Young, he's not some of these other guys that, you know, were picked in the similar spot in the draft or picked after him in the draft. But, you know, you've seen the maturity, you've seen the consistency grow, you've seen the responsibility that's put on him as a defensive anchor, and then now to score on the offensive end as well. And he's taken it and he's run with it. So it's been really neat to see his development, his progress, you know, just in these playoffs so far.
I think if you would have said to someone at the start of this series, hey, the Suns are going to be heading to Denver up 2-0, might not be all that surprising, but with the way that they've been able to do it and the way the scoring margin that they've had, what do you quantify that to? Is it, you know, Chris Paul finally being healthy and things going smoothly through him? Is it the mental hurdle of getting over the Lakers, or is it a matchup, just a good matchup against the Nuggets where they can really kind of thrive and run away with it?
I mean, I think it's all those things. I think it's just the fact that they've been able to really capitalize on momentum. And when they get rolling, and they always talk about how defense turns into offense. And so when they're able to get consecutive stops on that end of the floor and get going and transition on offense, or they're able to move the ball and do all of that, you know, on the other end of the floor, that's when this team is at its best. And so in the second halves of these games, you've seen that they've been able to do that. And they've been able to, you know, string some stops together and then really get going on the offensive end. And then when you have Chris Paul engineering things and orchestrating this offense, you know, it's great to see that his shoulder finally looks back to normal, or as close to normal as perhaps it'll be during these playoffs. And the way he's taken over in the fourth quarter has just been remarkable, whether it's been his scoring, whether it's been his facilitating. You know, in game two, 15 assists and zero turnovers. That's just been, it's been tremendous. And so that's been a huge thing for this team, obviously. And all of that is kind of strung together to create what this team has been able to do in the first two games.
We both know Monty Williams. We know that he is never satisfied, even if those are, you know, the results of game one and game two. If he's coming into game three, what's a point that might, I don't want to call it an area of concern, but a point that he can say we can improve upon to make sure that we don't let Denver back into this series in any way, shape, or form?
Well, I think Will Barton is going to be an interesting X factor for this Nuggets team moving forward. He had missed the previous 7 weeks with a hamstring injury and played in limited minutes in game two. And he's a guy who can come in and he's a microwave scorer. He can straight up get buckets for you. And so you saw it a little bit the other night, just in game two, him kind of getting his feet wet, but that he's going to have to be a guy that the Suns are accounting for. So I think that creates another layer as this series moves forward, as he perhaps gets more comfortable, or the minutes restriction kind of lifts a little bit or extends. And that's going to be, I think, a major thing moving forward too. And then also just dealing with home court advantage. Like I mentioned, Denver is now going to be at full capacity, and this will be probably the most hostile environment this team has faced all season long. And so what is it like for this young team when the crowd is not for you anymore? They are very much against you. And this team, this Nuggets team, will be in desperation mode. And I expect them to come out and play like that on Friday night, especially after Michael Malone called out his team and said, he said they're soft, that they've quit, that they you know, that just any type of adjective that you don't want to hear if you're a player, any type of description after a game. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they handle things in Denver and where the series stands potentially, you know, coming back to Phoenix next week.
You know the city of Denver, you've spent some time there, you have covered the Nuggets in the past. Now that you are back, I want to wrap it up with a food question, of course. Where, for any Suns fans that are heading up to Denver to check out this series, where are the go-tos for you to grab a meal before the game?
Yeah, well, I love down by Coors Field, which unfortunately the Rockies are on the road this weekend, but there are so many great spots with rooftops there. And since it's so hot now in Phoenix, take advantage of being able to be outside and eat somewhere and enjoy the nice weather, the nice downtown views. So plenty of spots down by the ballpark. Cherry Cricket is a great burger spot if you love a good burger. That's also by the ballpark. My favorite rooftop is Avanti, which is just off of downtown in the Lower Highlands. And then my favorite spot, bar none, is actually an ice cream place called Little Man Ice Cream, which is in that same neighborhood. And it's a cool like little walk-up place. It's shaped like a big old school like milk bottle. That's like, so you can't miss it if you're in the neighborhood. And the salted Oreo ice cream, it's like cookies and cream, but like a salted flavoring, which sounds really weird, but it is absolutely delicious. So those are my recs for anybody that is potentially coming out this weekend for the games.
Gina Mizell providing Suns insight, providing food recommendations. She does it all. Thanks so much for joining us, Gina.
No problem.
That is Gina Mizell, and this is the Brad Sussmat Show.
All right, as promised, I continue to want to bring you national voices on what is going on with the Suns. And the next voice is one I'm very familiar with from our days back in Southern California, and one of the great broadcasters. He is the voice of the New Orleans Pelicans. He's on Sirius XM. If you go over to channel 207 on the app, and I do listen to Sirius as part of their morning show, it is Joel Myers, who I'm sure is very familiar with Monty and Chris Paul and this whole cast of characters. It is good to see you and to hear your voice first and foremost. And right off the top, what do you make out of all this out here in Phoenix?
Well, I think it's a nice redemption run. That's the way I've kind of slotted it. And I slotted it months ago like that. But I'm not surprised by any of this, because I felt like the Suns could come out of the West. Because now the Suns, with all the talent have a great game manager in Chris Paul, a Hall of Famer, really disciplined, solid head coach in Monty. And I think they just did a good job overall. And then you bring in guys that, as players say, they have that dog in them, that fight in them. And Jay Crowder's one of those guys. Mm-hmm. That was a great position. But I'm not surprised at all, Brad, because that's how good Chris Paul is. And everybody knows that. I mean, what does he have? 38 assists over the last three games of the postseason. 38 assists and only two turnovers, actually.
Two turnovers, yeah.
He has. So I'm not surprised. I felt that strongly months ago about the Phoenix Suns.
How familiar are you and close with Monty or Chris from what you've done around the league in New Orleans?
Well, I missed Chris by a year. So it was kind of funny when he went to, ended up at the Clippers, he came up to me and he kind of whispered in my ear. He goes, "It's so strange to hear you on the Hornets," which they were called at the time. And, but I have the utmost respect for him because of the way he has persevered. And I like the way he handled as a pro, because he goes to Houston and then it was like he was banished to Siberia, which he wasn't. He went to Oklahoma City and I met with him there on a preview show with my partner, Antonio Daniels. And what he did for Shea Gilgeous-Alexander there was amazing. Mm-hmm. So we had asked for, to give you an idea, we'd asked for Chris. Chris comes into the conference room where we're doing all our interviews in, and Shea was with him, who we had not asked for. But like an intern, Shea was just modeling everything after Chris. He was every step with Chris. He was with him. So I give him credit. That's why I called it, and I started calling this months ago, the redemption run of Chris Paul. Mm-hmm. Well, as you know, they've been bounced, and whether Harden liked you or not, wanted to play with you or not, Chris from Oklahoma City, give James Jones credit because he was creative enough to make the deal. He brought in one of the great game managers we have ever seen in NBA history. And it's amazing. Remember this as well. Chris is 36 years old. So everybody talks about, well, will LeBron ever slow down? He's also 36 years old. If anything, I see more spring in the step of Chris Paul. And maybe it's because he's around a super young group like Devin Booker and Cam Johnson and Cam Payne and Mikal Bridges. And maybe it's energized him to that point where he's found a second wind in his career. So I'm happy for Chris Paul, Monty, and the whole group. And I think it's a great story. I think it's refreshing now that we have other teams involved, because you know it's the first time since 2011 we haven't had either Steph or LeBron in the NBA playoffs.
When you see Monty, what goes through your mind as an observer of the NBA for so long and a trusted voice of the league, knowing what he went through with the loss of his wife, coming here to this situation, which was just a train wreck, Joel? This was a model franchise, and I remember seeing you courtside a few times and just rolling my eyes, like, I don't know what we have here. And they bring Monty here, and to see where he is now, what do you make out of Monty?
Incredibly strong, disciplined person. And I was only around him for 3 years in New Orleans. And then, you know, I've been here 9 years now in New Orleans, mm-hmm. going on 10th, but Monty was the first three. And then Alvin took over. So didn't get to know him that well, but liked everything I saw because he held everybody accountable. Mm-hmm. And adjusted well. So he was a no-nonsense guy. And to, as you brought up, what he has been through, and the loss of his wife, what happened in Oklahoma City, and then going back to San Antonio, it's pretty amazing. And you guys are the fortunate ones in the Valley of the Sun, because you got him at the prime of his business life, where he's experienced so much, he's gone through so much, setbacks, you know, and then an elite athlete. You're not in the NBA unless you're one of the very best in the world. So when he was drafted, he went into the Knicks. Doc Rivers was kind of his godfather with the Knicks. All those life experiences, and you guys are the winners because you get him now in that window where everybody talks about it, business leaders talk about it, where they've had all those reps and all those experiences. And now once they get into their 40s and 50s, they feel like they're in the prime of their career. And I feel like that's where Monty is right now.
It's interesting because during the Lakers series, Joel, Chris Paul and Monty went back and forth, you know, with Chris's health, and to the point I'm sure you saw where Monty said, "You're not going to play in game three." And Chris said, "The hell I'm not. I'm going to get out here. I'm going to play." And the two talked openly about it, which is very rare in this league. A lot of times, you know, an injury happens And if you don't see it on camera, you don't even know that it's out there. You don't even know that these guys are playing through it. You don't even know what's going on behind the scenes. And I just find it refreshing how open the both of them are about everything that's gone on with this team. We don't know every last bit. We don't know how much Chris has gotten on DeAndre Ayton, which from what I'm hearing behind the scenes has been a lot. And now we see DA turning into something. But I just find that little combination between Chris and Monty really interesting.
Yeah, it's an extra coach, and he's an extension of Monty. So you got to remember they had a year together, just a year together.
Right.
And before that was all busted up. So they have had those kind of conversations, tough conversations, early in Chris's career, early in Monty's coaching career. So they've had some discussions before. And now, all these years later, upfront, honest, open, I don't doubt any of that. And what he's meant, I'm glad you brought it up, to DeAndre Ayton. Mm-hmm. I saw when Charles and Kenny, Shaq and Ernie had DeAndre on before the game. It was so refreshing to hear this young man. He was thoughtful, insightful. He listened to the questions. He had a smile on his face and in his responses, in his voices, because if you look back at what developed in that draft with DeAndre 1 and then Marvin Bagley 2, and then all of a sudden it became the Luka and Trey draft.
Right.
Well, it's DeAndre has grown up in a hurry thanks to a game manager and a leader on the floor like Chris Paul. So he's got a good coach, really good coach in Monty, who can be upfront and honest with him. And then it's your peers that police the locker room and what you do on the floor. And he's got a Hall of Famer doing that. So this early in DeAndre Ayton's career is invaluable. It's amazing how much it's going to mean to him. He's skilled. There is no question about that. But Chris Paul has helped accelerate the process to put him into positions to succeed. So it's been a great deal to DeAndre Ayton and a couple of the younger guys like that.
No. And it's a good point you bring up, because when DeAndre came in, they did not have a point guard. They brought in Ricky Rubio, and he was a big upgrade. And then you bring in Chris Paul, and he's a much bigger upgrade. And so he's actually had some people, and I think Crowder has gotten into him, and just some of the veteran guys, and James Jones quietly behind the scenes. Two other questions I'll get you out of here. What is going on with Denver from your view in this series? Is anything more than just Brad, look, the Suns won at home court. That's what they're supposed to do. Nothing's really happened here so far. Or this is going to be over in four.
Well, not necessarily four, but I like the Suns anyway. Going into the series, I thought they could get to the conference finals. And a lot had to do with Jamal Murray. When you take off a player of that magnitude,
right,
it can impact any team. So that's an all-star. And that's an all-NBA talent for years to come. That's how good Jamal Murray is. So when you only have one guy that you have to game plan for defensively, as opposed to two guys that you really have to worry about, and then Murray you have to guard on the outside so he keeps everybody honest. And then it opens up other things. Then the path to the basket is a little bit easier because of the spacing on the floor. So the loss of Jamal Murray, I'm surprised they got out of the first round the way they did.
Right.
And it cost Terry's job. So give Michael Malone credit for persevering the way they have. And they're a gritty group. They're really good. Paul Millsap contributes to that. They have a good roster. But you take away an all-star and an all-NBA talent, it's impossible. Because that's how deep the Suns have become with the addition of Chris Paul. So it's not on the Denver Nuggets at all, because they could have gone deep into the playoffs had they had Jamal Murray. Now, the bubble was kind of like a test and almost a lab experiment last year. But remember what Donovan Mitchell and Jamal Murray did in the playoffs last year in the bubble, and they were off the charts good. They elevated everybody around them. So with the loss of Jamal Murray, that impacted them. And I give them credit for getting it out of the first round to begin with.
Yeah, and so far Michael Porter hasn't been able to shoot straight. He's had a lot of good looks.
Right.
He's
young.
Good looks.
He's super young. Yeah. This is his first experience like this. He's only in his second season, because the first year and even last year was an unusual year, his full season in the NBA. He's going to be exceptional. There is no question. They were gifted him 14th overall in the draft because of the injuries when he was going to play two or three games at Mizzou. So they're going to be fine. And they didn't want to trade. You know, there were all the rumors. Well, they weren't just rumors. they wanted Drew Holiday. But at the same time, the previous regime and the Pels were not going to give up Drew Holiday unless Michael Porter Jr. was involved in the deal. That's how much they valued Michael Porter Jr. before he even got on the floor full time, which is this season.
Last question. I'll get you out of here, Joel, and I appreciate your time and your insight. The West, it is cool having four new teams. It's great. I think it's great for the league. It's great to see them. But of the four, which one do you like the most to get out?
Well, I want the Suns just for the simple reason. I think it's so healthy for the league. You've got five teams in the last eight teams, both conferences, Brad. You've got five teams that have never won it. And you got three teams that haven't won it forever. Sixers are the 83 with that Dr. J, Moses Malone, Bobby Jones, Mo, and Andrew Tony. Sheets. That group, 71, was the most recent for the Bucks, and that was Kareem and the Big O. And then for the Hawks, it's my favorite team, Bob Pettit. And the St. Louis Hawks, they were not even in Atlanta. It was 1958. So I think it's refreshing for the league because if you look at the NFL, that's what we love about the NFL. There's such parity, you never know. There's always one or two teams in the playoffs and, wow, didn't think they'd get there. And then the possibility of a team going to the Super Bowl that we didn't anticipate would be there at the end of the year. So that's why the NFL has really succeeded at a great rate because there's kind of that influx and some surprises every year. And now we have it in the NBA. As I mentioned before, first time we're not going to have Steph or LeBron in the finals since 2011. And I think it's healthy.
Yeah.
So five teams who could win it out of the eight that have never won it before. And I think it's great. I think it's exceptional that they're going to have a parade. And these teams haven't had parades forever.
Yeah. Well, it's a perfect storm here in Phoenix, just so you know, with COVID and the election and a new building that Robert gave a facelift to. Robert Sarver was loathed for years, and now he is taking a step back and he's behind the scenes and he redid the arena. And now you walk into there, it's not the Purple Palace, it's even nicer. It's not the Madhouse on McDowell, it's even louder. And right. So you have all that coming together in a community, and it is great to be open and to walk into an arena of 16,000 fans like last night. And it's an environment I haven't seen since I got over here in 93. So it's a lot of fun. And
yeah. And there's a couple of reasons I really want the Suns too. All right.
Al McCoy.
Yep. Okay. Who's my friend forever. And we do home and aways. We eat meals together when we're on the road or he's here or I'm there. We're always together. And then Eddie Johnson.
Yep.
And I mentioned it on the air. I'm happy for EJ. It's once you get past the first round, it's like, holy Toledo. I can't say holy yes, but holy Toledo. You know, it's like, it's so good and it's so healthy and it's so much fun. Yeah. You get the next round. All right, now let's get greedy. So I'm happy for Al and Eddie because it's when you get to the playoffs, it's just bonus. It's so much fun. And there's a couple of things. I love hockey. Like I watched last night, the Islanders and Bruins. When you get to the postseason, there's nothing like it.
Yeah.
What sport it is. And hockey, I love the hockey playoffs in particular because that's nonstop. There's no fights. There's no penalties. It's too valuable. You need everybody on the ice. So the NBA playoffs, the NHL playoffs at this time of the year, I'm in heaven. I very rarely go out the door except during the day for 18 holes. That's about it.
That's it. And one last thought, you'll like this. I've seen and ran into Jerry twice at games one and two, Jerry Colangelo walking into the arena. So he is there and I feel good for him too, because
right.
You know,
it's his baby.
It's his baby. That is. Joel, good seeing you. Thanks for the time and the insight.
Anytime, Brad. Thanks for having me.
There's Joel Myers. You can hear him over on Sirius XM NBA Radio. They do a terrific job. Their show is 7 a.m. Pacific right now until 10 a.m. And you can check out all their content there. We appreciate Joel Myers, and we're back with more after this timeout.
Welcome back to the Brad Sesmat Show. I'm Jordan Hamm filling in for the big guy, and Suns heading to Denver for game three here on Friday night. And wanted to get a Denver perspective of what's happened first two games for them, how they can right the ship, and really what's going on within the locker room for that team. So we are joined by Altitude reporter and analyst Katie Wynn. She does a great job covering the team. Katie, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Happy to be here.
Absolutely. So early on in this series, I think at the start of the series, if you would have told us that One team or the other was up 2-0. I don't think it would have been too much of a surprise, but the way that the Suns have been able to win those two games, what's been most surprising to you about those first two games? What's been your biggest takeaway about maybe the issues happening with the Denver Nuggets or what the Suns have been able to do especially well?
Yeah, well, I think we knew coming into this series that Phoenix's defense was vastly better than the Portland Trailblazers defense. And so the way that the Nuggets shot the ball in the Portland series, especially from three, it was, I mean, to not have that carry over, that to me is the thing that has been most surprising. Yes, the Suns have done a great job of knowing personnel and really challenging the Nuggets in some new and different ways and trying to limit Jokic in certain ways too. But the fact that the Nuggets just haven't been able to make shots like that to me, and then the reaction to that of like having their effort kind of falter a little bit, having the things that they can control go downhill with the lack of shot making. So it'll be really interesting to see how they respond at home. This is actually the first time we're going to have a full crowd, full capacity at Ball Arena tonight, and Jokic will get his MVP trophy in front of Nuggets Nation. So if they can't come out with energy tonight, I can't do anything for them. I don't think anybody can do anything for them, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, if that doesn't light a fire, I'm not sure exactly what will. Speaking of lighting a fire, we heard the comments by Michael Malone after game two. He is usually one that doesn't pull punches or words, but it sounds like that was just kind of next level for him. What level of frustration do you see out of him? And, you know, is it just as simply as he's just trying to motivate his team and really make it public his frustrations?
Well, I don't know if it's that simple. I think he genuinely is that frustrated, and Malone is a very authentic guy. So I think what he feels and what he sees, you're going to feel that, especially like through a Zoom call. Mm-hmm. So with that in mind, part of it is motivating. Part of it is, I mean, he's taken accountability too and been like, look, it was after that game too, he said it was an embarrassing loss from, you know, me to the players, to everybody, the way that they approached it. So I think there's a motivation factor for sure. There's an inspiration factor for sure. And what he wants more than anything, I think, is just for the guys to compete, like control what you can control. There's going to be nights where you're not going to make shots, but like, how do you respond and what can you control to give yourself some sort of advantage and on those situations and in those situations where, you know, you're not knocking down shots, your defense needs to do better on those nights. He's also such a defensive minded coach. So to have the Suns be dissecting, and Chris Paul in particular, the Nuggets defense and the way that they have been, that to me too, I'm sure is very frustrating for coach.
Mm-hmm. Will Barton able to come back for game two and in a limited capacity, but if he's able to go and have a major role, just what impact can he have on this series?
Well, you saw in game two, the way that he came out, like he made shots and he was limited in his minutes. Like you said, I think he only ended up playing 15 or 16 minutes. And Coach Malone had mentioned like he did not want to come out when coach took him out. Of course not. Like Will is the ultimate competitor. He wants to come in and help his team win, especially when they're not playing well. He wants to be a guy that can come in and really change that and flip that switch for the Nuggets. So he's very capable of that too. I think when you're looking for a guy to light a spark or to make shots, Will can take guys one-on-one and create and play make and be a guy that can find his own shot just from his own offense. So if his minute restriction can go up a little bit, I think that's only going to help the Nuggets, the more Will Barton that we can see. And then maybe some other guys can catch fire off of him, you know, like that. The Nuggets are such a contagious shooting team. If a couple guys hit, then it just builds off of that. And maybe Barton can be a guy that starts that up.
Speaking of outside shooting, Marcus Howard grew up here in Arizona, was able to cover him. One of the best ones I've ever seen at the prep level. But he's now with the Nuggets, playing meaningful minutes, had a pretty big impact in some of those Portland games. But what have you seen out of him go from an undrafted free agent now to carving out some really important minutes here in the postseason?
I think Marcus Howard, the way that he has stayed ready, like no one knew the Nuggets were going to have the injuries that they did. Mm-hmm. And all the credit to him for like building that reputation, earning those minutes, developing good relationships with the coaching staff, doing nothing but great things during practices and being a great teammate, all those little things, like this Nuggets coaching staff noticed. And so when it came time to like give him an opportunity, they had no problem being like, okay, Marcus, here you go. Like, this is your chance and we know you're ready and we believe in you. And they instilled that confidence in him, which I think gave him even more confidence in himself. Unbelievable shooter, like just unbelievable. I knew not a lot about him before, obviously he became a Denver Nugget. I knew some of what he did at Marquette, but for him to come in and given his size in the NBA and still finding ways to score and being crafty and, you know, weaving through defenses and getting a shot off, even though he is a smaller player in the NBA, just such a quick release. One of my favorite stories, I'll share this with you guys, obviously with the hometown roots in Phoenix. We asked Paul Millsap about him. Like, are you surprised by what Marcus Howard has put on the floor and the opportunity he's been given? And Paul, like, so straight-faced, and Paul's a savvy vet and he knows how these things work. And he said, absolutely not. And we were like, what, why? And he was like, he is just the ultimate pro's pro. Like, he's like, I've never met a rookie who looked forward to doing rookie duties. Like, just so grateful, so grounded. You see his work ethic and his effort pay off in a major way. And I think that's why he has the respect that he has of this entire franchise.
Yeah, that certainly sounds like Marcus. Doing the not fun stuff, but just being joyful about it.
He also lives with Michael Porter Jr. And so I think like that relationship and that the way that friendship has formed and the way that Mike has maybe been able to help Marcus through some of those bumps that you hit during your first year in the NBA that I'm sure Mike has experienced and is still kind of finding ways to sort through, but having that guy to just kind of lean back on, and both those guys are very solid in their faith. So that's been really huge for Marcus too.
Mm-hmm. We've touched on a couple players already, but obviously I think Jokic is gonna do what he's gonna do, but you obviously in postseason basketball, you need a couple other guys really stepping up. Who do you see could be an X factor or a reason for optimism for the Nuggets here in game 3 and game 4?
Well, I talked about making shots, and honestly, like, it could be any of the guards at this point. And for them to all be off on the same night in the same way was just a really unfortunate circumstance for the Nuggets. So Austin Rivers had been really good for them in that Portland series, stepping up and knocking down shots in big moments. And Monte Morris was another guy who was doing the same thing. He was coming in and was running that second unit really well and was knocking down open shots and being really aggressive and attacking the hoop. So those two guys are guys that I'm watching tonight for sure, just to see if the Nuggets can get some rhythm going from outside and knock down a couple of those threes.
Katie, thanks so much for the time and the insight. We appreciate it.
Yeah, not a problem.
That is altitude reporter and analyst Katie Wingy, and this is the Brad Sessmatt Show.